Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Cattlecast Reader's Roundtable edition. I'm Jessica Trotter. I am with my friends, Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza, and we are your cattle selectors.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, ladies.
We're starting off celebrating Disability Pride Month. That's our theme for the day.
We talk amongst ourselves a lot about how publishing is getting better and better at publishing.
But still.
Yeah, it's still a struggle across all the genres that we all select
all
for
ages,
and all
genres.
Ages. And so we all try to keep an eye on what has come out. And I think we've kind of got a neat selection of things today. I'll start out with one that I was really looking forward to coming out. It's from Milkweed Editions, which really is my favorite publishing company, I have to say. I just like their work. I like the perspective that they have. I always love their books, and they're just beautiful, beautifully made books as well. And this is called Losing Music, A Memoir by John Cotter. And this is a memoir that has an intersection of disability, pride, but really hard-won disability pride, because John Cotter had an adult onset of Meniere's disease that hit, kind of slow at first, sort of like, what's going on with my hearing? It's kind of cutting in and out, and then ended up becoming just a full-blown attack of hearing loss, vertigo, extreme sickness when he had the vertigo, and really progresses as the book goes on. So this is also a book about difficult diagnoses and getting diagnoses often of exclusion, where the medical community really doesn't know much about the disease that you have, which is the case here with Meniere's, and dealing with that. And then coming to terms with, okay, so I have this extreme change. He could not do the career that he had been involved with, teaching, writing. He had to leave so much of that behind, and how does he forge, a new life? How does he embrace and try to make peace with this part of himself? And it's a pretty harrowing journey in this book, but it's extremely beautifully written. He's a writing professor. He has written a work of fiction. He's written plays. He's written in for all sorts of, literary journals, poetry, and you can really tell. I mean, this is a really intimate memoir. You are right inside of his mind, dealing with this, just reeling, literally physically often reeling, head almost to the floor because he's so having such an extreme bout of vertigo. But it starts with music and it ends with music. He was one of these, people. He's a Gen X age guy, and music was his passion. Mm-hmm. And it starts out with music, and he likes his own, like all of us, whatever he loves, which is sort of quirky, and he's talking about that. And then it ends with a way that he's still able to access music. And the journey in between is, like I said, sort of harrowing, but also really a beautiful story.
You say you would do kind of a trigger warning for?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I would do a trigger warning for suicide. Meniere's disease is an illness that has led to some suicide attempts, and that is a trigger warning in this book. That he goes to the depths of despair and comes back out of that, but he does go there.
Wow. Amazing.
That one's been on my radar.
Yeah. Cool. So I have a young adult novel, teen novel. It's called Give Me a Sign by Anna Sortino. This is a debut author, and this was such a lovely teen read. Not only does it have a little bit of fun romance, but it just opened up my world a little bit more as far as like just trying to learn about hearing impaired or, I'm sorry, hard of hearing communities and deaf communities, low vision, children or teens who are blind. This is the story of Lila. And it's kind of set somewhere in the Midwest is what I'm thinking. She's from the Chicago suburbs, and she had been going to this camp because she is hard of hearing, but she uses hearing aids, so she can hear some things, but she misses a lot. And for whatever reason, she's allowed herself to get rusty in ASL. And she used to go to this camp, and it was always just this really wonderful experience for her. But she got out of it as she got into her tween years, And as a 17-year-old, she decides she wants to go back, and she decides to ask if she can be a counselor, or like a junior counselor in training is what it is. So she does get to go back. It's called Gray Wolf, and there is just this little community of counselors who are maybe have low vision, or in some cases fully blind, or have some sort of hearing a loss, hard of hearing, some who are totally deaf. There are also a couple counselors who don't have any kind of what we would call a disability, meaning they're hearing persons, they see fully. The lifeguards are from the UK, and they're charming. but this community really grows together, and the author really kind of gets into some issues that are kind of hard for kids to experience if you're deaf or hard of hearing. You know, imagine going through a drive-thru and having someone challenge your attempt to give them your cell phone, asking for your order. I remember my dad. He had a really hard time going through drive-thrus and expressing himself. I can imagine what it would be like for someone who cannot hear, trying to communicate this and just having people kind of challenge you and like, they're just kids. They're just goofing off. They're not really telling the truth. Having encounters with police where police are not acknowledging that you're deaf. Anyway, Lila is someone who is really interested in embracing ASL again. She's kind of rusty, and she is wanting to get better and better. And Isaac, who is a strong character in the book, he decides to help her out, and they are learning. He is teaching her sign language along the way. It is just a beautiful story because it's a camp that is struggling financially, like many nonprofits do. It's funny in that, you know, oh, the website hasn't been updated since 2012. Oh, we only have, you know, two watchers of our one YouTube film. And, you know, being teens are like, we got to step it up. We got to do better if we want to get donors to support us. So it's a really lovely story. And because it's summer, it's something I highly recommend. The book is actually not going to be released until maybe tomorrow or Wednesday. I was able to read it through an ARC or an advanced reading copy that I got to read on my Kindle. And I just cannot recommend it enough. Really liked it a lot.
Very cool.
Excellent.
Well, okay, you've got summer and a little bit of a teenage romance, so I'm going to move into a new adult romance. I want to talk about Like Real People Do. It's a first book by E.L. Massey. It is a new adult romance. I am a sucker for a hockey romance, so one of the couple is a hockey player, new to the NHL, kind of the youngest captain ever, totally in the closet, not entirely sensible. He does things without thinking, and he comes off as worse than he is. He's really not a bad kid. He just is young. And you know, he is a full-on NHL hockey player, and that's a lot for his age. And then we have Eli, that's Alex, and then we have Eli, who is starting college, or is in college. He's adjusting to, the grand plan for him was to be Olympic-bound figure skater. He gets in a car accident. He deals with a lot of issues from the car accident, but he is continuing to deal with a traumatic brain injury that causes a number of issues, but one of the things that is recurring within the story is that he does get seizures. He's a wonderful guide dog who is part of the story. There was a wonderful cranky cat that is part of the story. But it's just these two kind of, they meet because Alex is parked in the handicapped spot, dumbly, and he knows it. And you know, so Eli does not start with any kind of positive view. But they work it out. They make friends, and it's just a nice, interesting romance. It is a series starter. It's called the Breakaway Series, and there is a sequel available now and a third book coming out next spring, I think. But it's just it's an interesting view of adjusting to a traumatic brain injury and those other kinds of things, but also Alex, part of Alex's issue is actually an anxiety disorder as well. So it's him, again, trying to figure out life in the big leagues, being young, having anxiety, and being in the closet as well. So it's an interesting romance to work around.
Wow, sounds good. The book that I have next is called Plums for Months, Memories of a Wonder-Filled Neurodivergent Childhood by Zaji Cox. And this was a little bit smaller press book, and I honestly can't remember how it came across my radar, but when it did, it was highly acclaimed, and it's an excellent work of creative nonfiction. I think this would be inspiring on so many levels, but even for people who want to write memoir, who want to write poetic, really intimate memoir that kind of really speaks from the heart or inside of the mind, this is sort of a masterpiece of that. They're just little tiny vignettes. And what it really is kind of a story told through vignettes from inside the mind of Zaji Cox, who is a very young child growing up in the beginning of the story. And she's growing up in Portland, Oregon area, but in the country. And her family, her mother, she has a single mother and her sister, and they don't have a lot of money, and they live in a really charming but extremely ramshackle house. And it's really falling apart, it's leaking, it's freezing, and they have all these rituals, but it's surrounded by, you know, beautiful nature, and it's her home, and she deeply loves it. And it's not a negative story about her home. Now, she goes to see her father, who lives in a much nicer home. She talks about that, too. But the home is almost a character. And so at once, this is a story of neurodivergence, of being inside of the neurodivergent mind and body and being misunderstood, mm-hmm. and trying to communicate what's inside, which is this extremely rich life, but not being able to communicate that verbally quite as well as she would like. Mm-hmm. But it's also really a story of childhood, extremely evocative, about those places in our childhood that are dear to us, even if they wouldn't be dear to anybody else, and those memories, and how, as we age, some of those places go and we have to leave and you can't really quite go back. So mm-hmm. there's a little haunting poignance, but it's a really positive story, especially about her relationship with her sister and her mother, who completely respect her boundaries and her choices and raise her in this really affirming way. So I really like that about the book as well. So just an excellent book.
Okay. Cool. Well, my next book, this is Mari, is A Day with No Words. It's by Tiffany Hammond. And this is a New York Times bestseller, as some of you may know. This is really, really, it was really a stunning book for me because it is about a boy's a kind of nonverbal experience and kind of a day in the life of with his mom going throughout the day, communicating together. And often they communicate with a tablet and with symbols, and it's you're picturing silence, and that's probably the part that stunned me the most is like just considering like we live in such an audible world.
Yes.
Like just everybody is really loud. In fact,
yes.
One of the beginning pages, picture book, is I'm surrounded by voices chattering away. It seems as if everyone has so much to say. Like just this like, and
yep.
If you are someone who does not communicate audibly, you're not someone who speaks, then I think it could probably be incredibly easy to feel discounted or set aside. And this book really celebrates, I think, the ways in which an autistic boy, like this character, fictional story, can communicate, and how his mother really celebrates that, and how they both advocate for each other. It can be, I don't know, I'm just really thinking about this a lot, and just this idea of like normalizing who we are, not being an other, having everyone respond to you in a way where you feel like you're being heard, regardless of, you know, not being able to speak or wanting to speak with an audible voice. I want to mention that Tiffany Hammond actually is a mom who kind of has like a blog or a platform. She calls it, is it Fits and
Giggles?
Fits and Giggles, is it? Okay. She writes a lot about autism and raising children who are autistic, advocates for them, really celebrates them with her fidgets and fries,
oh,
I believe.
Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, fidgets and fries. I was like, Giggles doesn't sound familiar to me. But she, I had to look it up because I was just like, wow, she just sounds like a really amazing blogger, but as well as writer. And I also want to mention, I don't want to forget that Kate Cosgrove, is someone from the Lansing area. She's an amazing illustrator. You may remember the book that I fell in love with, And the Bullfrog Sing, A Life Cycle Begins. She's the illustrator in this book. She went to Michigan State University, and I'm just like, wow, yay, go Kate. I'm very, very excited. So
awesome.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank you because you told me, after you finished that book, you basically said, you need to read this book.
Okay.
And I did, and I loved it. And I think I'm closing out today. I read a book called A Mind Spread Out on the Ground by Alicia Elliott. And that, the phrase, is a rough translation of the Mohawk phrase for depression. It's about as close as you can get in their language. This wasn't a concept that, oddly enough, existed pre-colonization, so they didn't really need. So this is kind of what they've come up with. But it's a really interesting book of, I'd say, essays. It's a memoir. It's Alicia Elliott is the author, and she's sort of looking at her life with her parents. There's issues kind of on both sides with her parents, but one of the running, ongoing storylines through this is her mother's mental health. Bipolar disorder is what she's diagnosed with, but it's just, she's in and out of treatment. Sometimes it's because her father has put his foot down and essentially committed her. It's uncomfortable, but it's very interesting. But her stories are also interwoven with a lot of history, a lot of really looking at kind of why her family is the way it is, what types of things have influenced the, you know, whether it's family members being within reservation schools or family members trying to dodge reservation schools by, you know, instead of, her family started off in Canada, but her, she was raised in the United States for at least a portion of time. So there's a bit of movement back and forth between the two countries. And it's a very interesting look at colonialism in regards to the indigenous tribes, the tribes and their culture, just in general, mental health, motherhood, gentrification, she hits on everything, and it's a lot of really current interesting topics that she addresses through her essays. So I would highly suggest it. She also has a fiction book coming out, which is going to be, it's sort of that line of psychological thriller / horror that I'm really, really interested to see what people think. So and that's coming out in the fall. But this is her memoir, A Mind Spread Out in the Ground. It's Alicia Elliott.
Sounds interesting.
That's been on my list for a long time.
It was on mine as well, and I actually probably wouldn't have picked it up if I hadn't seen that fiction book was coming out soon too.
Oh yeah, right.
But I will say that it's a really good audiobook. That's actually how I read most of it as the audio. So that's been great. It's been interesting. There's a lot of good stuff coming too.
Really
just gotta
is.
Say.
Definitely.
All right, I think that's what we have for you today.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Right. Thank you.
Happy reading.